Well, we are in a series called Giving Up, Taking Up, because we're observing Lent together as a church, and that's a new concept for some of us. It's a strange concept, but basically we just said we're going to, for the next 40 days, we're going to give up some things in our lives that we've maybe got too much of, and we're going to take up some things in our lives that maybe we don't have enough of. And so we said all along, giving up or taking up things specifically is really about creating space where we can hear or experience God in new ways. And so we're a week and a half into this and 40-day journey. So if you've if you're tempted to give up on Lent at this point, don't do it. Hang in there. I know some of you have taken this calendar that we made and we handed out a couple weeks ago. If you didn't get one, you can get one today. And you've been doing the things that are on here. Others of you have given up other things or taken up other things. And this is where it gets tough. This is where it can be hard. This is where you might be, you know, a week and a half in and think, well, I haven't like experienced God in any earth-shattering ways at this point. And that's okay. You know, Jesus, he went on a 40-day journey into the wilderness. And I'm guessing it was pretty hard. I'm guessing it was lonely at times. I'm guessing a week and a half in, maybe he hadn't experienced God in any life-shattering ways at that point. And so just kind of hang in there and make space and keep watching and listening and hearing from God and seeing what he does in this 40-day experiment. Today we're going to talk about a sentiment that I think most of us feel or experience in our lives. And I want to introduce it by showing you a video in just a second. A friend of mine wrote a book recently called More or Less, and actually comes out in next week. And to promote the book or to kind of introduce people to some of the concepts in the book, he put together and made a video, and it just fits so well with some of the things we're going to talk about today. And so I want to show you this video, and then we'll jump in.
There's never enough time. Every night I go to bed with a to-do list longer than is possible for the next day. I balance time between family, friends, clubs, groups, work. I document it all online with profiles and feeds to make it seem like it's all sorted out. But the truth is, it's not sorted out at all. Time is what I want most, but what I use worst. If time really is money, then I'm broke. I think a lot of us are. Casually returned the question to me, and I said the same. I'm pretty busy. Feels like too much is happening right now. I don't know when it changed. I remember the typical response used to be, I'm fine. Everything is fine. We're all fine. We're all busy, trying to say that despite a down economy or a negative news cycle, that at least our lives have a lot going on. The busy is somehow better than being fine. But busy often means I'm not fine at all. I think it wears on all of us after a while and creates this strange longing for some way to press pause on the busy and learn what it means to be present. Sometimes it takes grounding yourself, turning off your phone, shutting the laptop, getting away for a little while, and finding peace in the quiet. So I took an experiment to just stop and quit it all for just a moment. To try and remember what it means to be instead of what it means to only do. To break the seemingly endless pattern of consumption and spend less time reacting to what's urgent and more time returning to what's important.
time is what I want most, but what I use worst, he said. If time really is money, then I'm broke. I think a lot of us are. Or how about this? When did it change from I'm fine to I'm busy? It's interesting because I think about that, and it's true. In my life, every time someone asks me, what's going on? How's it going? What's new in your life? I always say, I'm busy. Super busy. Crazy busy. Busy week. A lot going on. I feel like that's like my answer all the time. I read a blog post the other day by a woman. She's a writer. Her name is Shauna Nyquist. And I want to read you part of it. This is what she wrote. She wrote this. I think I've been in a hurry for almost 7 years. I've been stacking things up, plan upon plan upon plan. I've been cramming things in, pushing, hustling, scurrying. I've been strategizing, multitasking, layering commitments one upon another like bricks. It worked for a while. I like to be busy. I'll always be a kind of more is more person when it comes to my schedule. With one child, the pace didn't bother me much. So maybe it's a second kid thing. Maybe it's a second kid who is a terrible sleeper thing. Maybe it's the accumulated exhaustion of 2 kids, 2 miscarriages, 3 books, countless trips and events, 1 marathon, 1 move. Maybe some weird timer goes off inside you when you turn 36. I don't know. All I know, she says, is along the way, I signed up for a schedule that seemed so fun, not taking into account the pace that a super fun schedule would force me to keep. I had a lot of fun, but not a lot of margin. I gathered up some amazing experiences, but I didn't rest well or often. I gulped down so much life, but at a certain point, I was too tired and ground away to taste it anymore. Last year, it stopped working for me. Now, this is interesting because whether you're in your 20s or 30s or 40s or even older than that, I think probably a lot of us in this room this morning know exactly what she's talking about. We're too busy. We're too frantic. We're running, you know, everywhere. We're fractured. And we've just got something going on all of the time. And a lot of the things we've got going on are really good and they're fun, and yet we never took into account the kind of schedule or the kind of frantic busyness that we're forced to keep up with all of the things. And the truth is, some of us are probably too scared to admit it, or some of us are too numb to admit it, or some of us are maybe too proud to admit it, but probably like her, it stopped working for us as well. But that's really hard to admit. Now, I'm sure there's some people here today who are not in this boat. Maybe you're one of those people that like has margin in your life. Maybe you balance things really, really well. Maybe you've just got tons of extra time. Maybe you're unemployed right now and you wish you were busy. Maybe you're bored in certain parts of your life. And if that's the case, like, great. Like, you can relax for a little while this morning. And we'll come back and talk about your issues next week. But my hunch is, for most of us, 90% of us, maybe even 99% of us. And if this message and this topic is for anyone today, it's for me. For most of us, we're too busy. We're living a busy, maxed out life. And so here's the question I want to ask this morning. What if we gave up our busyness? What if we decided to give up busyness? What if we made some changes in our lives? Maybe if we made some changes even during Lent, and we simply gave up busyness? In other words, what if we stopped living frantic, fractured lives and we started actually experiencing life a little more? What if we were able to start experiencing life in the moment and not be always thinking about things that are happening tomorrow or what I didn't do yesterday or all the things on my task list or all the things on my schedule that I need to get done? What if we were able to not just survive in life, but thrive in life? Like what if we could just not be so busy? And then, what if we not just could give up our busyness, but we could also take up something instead? What if we could take up rest? Like true life-giving, authentic rest. You know the kind of rest that you have when you go on vacation, and not throughout the whole vacation, but like day two or three of the vacation, when you've been able to like decompress, you know, after day two or three, you've been able to decompress, but you haven't reached the end where you've already started thinking about all the things you're going to have to do when you get home. You know that like one moment that you experience in the middle of vacation, you know, maybe every once in a blue moon, every few years. What if we could experience that regularly? Not just every few years, but yearly, monthly, weekly, regularly in our lives. What if we could actually experience true peace, calmness, and regular rest and give up busyness? That's the question, and that's the challenge. Now, I don't think that's an unattractive idea or thought. I'm guessing I wouldn't get a lot of pushback from that question this morning. I'm guessing all of us would say, yeah, I would love to experience that. Like, that would be great. I'm there. I'm signed up. Let's do that. How? Like, that's the big question. How? Like, how do you do that? Because we're busy for a reason. Like, there's a lot of things going on, and they seem all important, and I don't even know how to get from where I am to what you're saying I could maybe experience. It just doesn't even seem realistic. And so here's what I want to do. I want to give you three suggestions this morning for giving up busyness and taking up rest. And we'll kind of talk about the first two more quickly, and then we'll camp out a little bit more on the third one. So three suggestions real quick. Number one, for giving up busyness and taking up rest, start saying no. I mean, this is really simple, but it's pretty hard to start saying no to things. So when somebody invites you out for dinner this weekend, you don't just immediately say yes. That's not your default. You think about it. You look at your schedule, and if your schedule is already maxed out this week, if you've left yourself no margin, no space, no place to actually rest, then you say to your friends, man, I'd love to. I just can't do it this week. I'm going to have to say no. I'm going to have to pass it. Shoot me an email. Let's do it in a couple of weeks when I've got more time, when I can schedule it, when I can make it work. It's nothing against you. I can't. We need to learn to start saying no a little more often. What about job responsibilities? Now, that's a tough one because we don't feel like we can often say no when our boss or when there's new opportunities or when there's new things handed to us. But what if our default wasn't always yes? What if we could always say, let me consider it and let me think before I add another thing to my plate, is this really important enough? Is there something else I need to take off my plate in order to add this to my plate? Because this is more important than something else. We need to get in the habit of being okay with saying no. I mean, if that video is right, and time really is money, and there's a sense that most of us are broke or we're in debt because we're spending our time on more things and more and more things. I mean, if we were in debt with real money, and if we were broke with real money and we went and we saw a financial counselor, what would they say? Stop buying things that you don't need. Stop spending money on things that you can't afford. Shouldn't we do the same thing with time? Shouldn't we stop every time we get a new request, a new group to be a part of, a new club, a new opportunity, a new job responsibility, something else to sign our kids up for, whatever? Shouldn't we stop and say, maybe the default should always be no? And if there's a compelling reason to say yes to this, I'll consider it. But maybe we need to start saying no more often. So that's the first suggestion. You don't have to ditch your friends. You don't have to quit your job. You don't have to stop coming to church or serving here. Like, you don't have to say no to everything. But what if there was just an internal check every single time you were presented with a new opportunity and you said, you know what, my default's going to be no because I don't need more stuff in my life. There needs to be a compelling reason to say yes to this. Okay, number two, commit to a lifestyle of unbusyness. Now, this is a lot harder. Because sometimes it's not just about the individual choices. Oftentimes the individual choices pile up and they make up an entire lifestyle that we have created for ourselves. Let me give you a few examples. When you're single, when I was single, and it's all about community and hanging out with friends, and you've got a lot more time and you can do things. It's really easy to have something going on every single night, every single weekend, all the time. And they're all good things. It's skiing with friends. It's hiking. It's sledding. It's, you know, being part of groups. It's attending. I mean, they might even be church things, small groups or missional community or Bible studies or things like that. It's hanging out and doing things that are good. But what if we've gotten to the point where it feels weird if I spend a night alone by myself? Or it feels weird if I've got a weekend where I've got nothing planned. If that seems unnatural or strange, then what we've done is we've created a lifestyle of busyness where we feel like we just have to say no and do every possible thing we can. And some of us, especially when you're single and you feel like you've got more time and you've got so many opportunities, we create a lifestyle of busyness. We do this with work a lot. Some of us probably work way too much. Of course, there's times where you have to like go the extra mile. There's a project that has to be finished. There's something special we've got to do at work, and we've got to put in some extra time. That's something we need to commit to. But if I'll be blunt, if we get to a point where we're working 50, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, and that's the norm, or that's the rule, and that's not the exception, then we've created a lifestyle of busyness. With something that's good. Is work good? Yeah. Is God maybe using you there? Yeah. Are you doing very significant things? Are you using your gifts? Are you contributing to the world in a significant way? Of course. But we can take healthy and good things and then create a lifestyle that is unhealthy and not good for us. And it can be a guy thing. I mean, guys tend to do this more. But it's not just a guy thing. It's not just a corporate kind of business thing. I've seen nurses do this. I've seen teachers. I mean, teachers do this a lot. You can spend all day with kids. Bless your soul. You can have amazing patience teaching kids all day, and then you come home and you grab a bite to eat, and you spend all night making the lesson plans for the next day. Or you spend all weekend making lesson plans for the next week, and you're doing amazing, important work, but you have created a lifestyle of busyness. Sometimes we do this with our kids. We are tempted, for those of us who have kids, to sign up for every possible sports team they could be on, and they need to learn every single musical instrument, and they've got lessons for that, and they've got clubs for everything. And there can be Saturdays where it's literally going from one thing to another. And when our kids get old enough to go to school, we've got something every single afternoon. Like, there's something they need to do every single day. And we never stop to realize all these things are good things, but we've created a lifestyle of busyness. And we're teaching our kids that they have to fill their schedule with something every single minute of every single day and always be doing something. We're passing on a lifestyle and a culture of busyness to them. And so I think this is an area where we probably, and I say we, because I think we need to make probably some pretty hard choices. Whether it's with friends, whether it's doing fun stuff, experiences, whether it's work, whether it's with our kids, whatever it is, we need to ask the question, have I taken something good and healthy and created a lifestyle around it that's possibly not good and not healthy for me in the long run? And if I have, I need to make some significant changes to that. Maybe I do need to make some changes at work. Maybe I do need to make significant changes with my kids or with friends. Have we created a lifestyle of busyness or unbusyness? Now, those are the first two suggestions, but here's the third suggestion, and this is maybe the most practical. I think this is the most simple. I think it's the one that's probably helped me the most in my life. Number three, practice Sabbath. Practice Sabbath. That the best way to give up busyness and to take up rest on a consistent basis is to practice Sabbath. Now, when you hear the word Sabbath, depending on what your background is, whether it's kind of churchy background or maybe non-religious background, that I grew up, and I still, when I think Sabbath, I think Sunday. and I think going to church. And I grew up in the South, so there's like anti-liquor laws. That's right. No beer on the whatever. And no, you know, like there's just kind of this weird cultural thing that comes around this word Sabbath. But that's, all those things are not what the Hebrews or the Israelites who first coined this term would have thought of when they use the word Sabbath. In fact, for them, the word Sabbath was just a day of the week. And I want to put up here and show you on the screen the way that Hebrews named their days. They didn't have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They called their days this, Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, Yom Revi'i, Yom Chamashi, Yom Shishi, and Shabbat. Which literally translates to, Rishon is the word for one or first. So that's one day or day one. 2 day, 3 day, 4 day, 5 day, 6 day, stop. Day. In fact, they usually didn't even use the word day in there. The seventh day was just called stop. That's what Shabbat means. It just means cease. It means stop. It means just stop doing what you've done the other 6 days. Rest. Don't do any more of the things that you do. That's where we get this word, Sabbath. Now, God first instructed the Israelites to do this in a passage that we read last week. Remember, they were wandering in the wilderness, and they got hungry, and so they started grumbling and complaining to God, and God said, well, I'll give you food. I'm going to make this food appear on the ground, and you have to go out and gather it and collect it and then cook it every single day, and I want you to do that every single day for 6 days. But then on the seventh day, on Shabbat, you don't have to go out. You don't have to do any work. I want you to just rest. I want you to stay and just... Because guess what? On the sixth day, I'm going to provide you twice as much as you'll need. So you'll gather all you need on the sixth day, and you'll have plenty so that you can just rest and not do anything on the seventh day. God then made it really clear that this was important in the Ten Commandments. When he wrote this, and this is in Exodus chapter 20, reading from verse 8. He said, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Now, we'll leave that up there for a few minutes because let's kind of unpack what's going on in this passage. It's pretty clear that Sabbath simply means rest from work. Like you just don't do work on that day. And it's not even just about you. You don't do work. Your kids don't do work. The people that normally work for you don't do work. I mean, he just goes through at your animals, no work for them, whatever that means. Illegal aliens shouldn't do work on that day. Minimum wage people in your city shouldn't do work on that day. What if we created a day where everybody in your sphere of influence, you didn't do work and you didn't cause anyone else to do work, that it was all about simply resting on that day? Because it's stop day. It's ceasing day. It's rest day. So really, that's what Sabbath is all about. That's how we should think about it when we think about Sabbath. Sabbath is simply whatever work is for you, you don't do it on that day. So, for you, you just need to define what is work. Just ask the question, what is work for me? And then, what does it look like to take a day off every single week from whatever that work is? Work for me, personally, is any work I have to do related to being a pastor, because that's my main job. So that includes preparing for a sermon. That includes doing any kind of work related to my other duties. And so I make Sabbath Saturday. Saturday is like my Sabbath day. And I try not to do any work related to my job on that day. I'm also a student, so homework is work for me. So I try not to do any work or assignments related to my schooling on Saturday as well. Checking email is actually work for me, because there's usually work-related things. And once I just log in, start checking emails, my mind starts going and thinking about things or responsibilities I got to do. So I take off from email on Saturdays. I don't check email because I know that's just going to drag me into work. Maybe for you, you've got to define what is work for you. Maybe work is, maybe you're a stay-at-home mom and work is making dinner. Or lunch, or breakfast, or it's cleaning the house, or it's things like that. And maybe that's what work is for you, and so you need a day every week where you don't do any of that. Which actually means you have to prepare for the Sabbath. You remember the Israelites, they had to collect twice as much on the day before so that they had enough, so that they could actually rest on the Sabbath day. So maybe the day before you say, you know what? Work is like making dinner and cooking it and all those things. So let's make enough today so that we've got tomorrow. So all we have to do is pop it in the microwave or we'll, you know, whatever. Prepare for rest on the Sabbath so you can cease doing work. You can rest from work on that day. Maybe mowing the grass is work for you. And so you don't mow the grass on the Sabbath. Maybe you love to mow the grass, and so you mow the grass all. Maybe that's restful for you. Maybe that's energizing. Maybe that's recharging. You can come over to my house and recharge there as well. So what? It's essentially whatever it is that's restful and recharging, you do those things on the Sabbath. Whatever it is that is about productivity, getting things done, work for you, you rest from those things on the Sabbath. On the Sabbath, you can go to church. That's a good thing. That can be restful. That can be worshipful. That's a way that you can see friends. You can hang out with friends. You can watch football. You can play football. Whatever it is, it's going to be restful. You spend time with your family, take a nap, sleep in. Whatever it's going to rest and recharge you, that's what you do on the Sabbath. Now, there might be a few pushbacks to this whole idea of the Sabbath. You might think, you know, well, can I really take an entire day off every week? Like maybe based on your current schedule, you think, I can't do that. Like I can't get everything done that I need to get done and take a whole day off. And I think that's why in these verses it says, look, God made the entire world in 6 days. And so if God made the whole world and he did everything that he needed to do and then he took a day to just rest from that work, it's like God is setting the example for us. You can get done everything you need to get done in the 6 days I've given you. You can rest for 1 day a week and get done what you need to get done. Another pushback that I often have is, well, but it's right now I'm in my busy season. Like I'm just in a busy season. I think I say that to Janice, my wife, so much. It's always, oh, I'm just crazy season. I'm just so busy right now. It's just kind of a unique season right now. I think she started going, when is it not your busy season? And God addresses this as well. In fact, later in Exodus, he sort of drives home all the commandments and all the laws that he gave to Israel again. And so look at what he says in Exodus 34:21. He re-explains the concept and he says, 6 days you shall labor, but on the seventh day you shall rest. Even during the plowing season and harvest, you must rest. It's kind of like, yeah, I know you're busy, but even during your most busy seasons, even during the most significant seasons, even when you need to plow, even when the harvest has come in and it's like you've got a 2 week window to go out and get the harvest and bring it in, I still want you. Like, I'm not really putting exceptions into this general rule. I think you need to always take a Sabbath in your life. I think you'd look at us and say, you know what? Even during Christmas, you need Sabbath. Even when it's tax season, you need Sabbath. Even at the end of the semester when you've got everything due, you need to take a Sabbath. Even when you're this close to closing the deal and you just got to push through, you need Sabbath in your life. Even when you're the most busy, you need to take a day every single week and practice the Sabbath. Now, do you know how important this is? I think the temptation for me or for us would be to be like, well, this is kind of a nice to have. Like, let's just try to do this a little bit more than we do it right now. Like, this is kind of a nice to have. This is one of those things that God kind of said. I mean, maybe it was just for the Israelites, and we don't have to do it as much. Our culture's different. Our work schedules are different. And so if you can take some time to rest every once in a while, that's a good thing. But it's a recommendation. It's a suggestion. I don't think that's the case. Let me show you how God frames what he says here. The Ten Commandments, if you think about them, are the centerpiece of the law that God gave to Israel. They're the centerpiece of the main instructions that he was giving to Israel to say, these are the main things that you need to do and observe and live out as a people. And they continue to be things that we as Christians look to and say, these are like defining instructions for life that we should live. Now, there are in Hebrew 172 words to the Ten Commandments. If you were to read through them in Hebrew, it's slightly different in English, but if you just read through them in Hebrew, there's 172 words in the Ten Commandments. I want to show you a pie chart here for a second. If you were to draw a pie chart of how many words are dedicated to each commandment as a percentage of the whole, this is what it would look like. It's not very even, is it? Notice that there are a couple of commandments which are the most prominent, that more than 50% of the words that God used are dedicated to the second and the fourth commandment. And then there's one that really stands head and shoulders above. In fact, a third of the Ten Commandments is dedicated only to the fourth commandment, which is the one that we just read a few minutes ago. Why is it that God spends so much time on that one? Now, maybe it's just because it takes a whole lot less words to say, do not murder, which is the sixth commandment. Don't commit adultery, or don't steal. But it's funny, because those three commandments are the ones that probably, if I had said, name me some commandments today, we would have all named those first and foremost, right? Don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal. And yet God spends less words on those than any of the others. And for some reason, God felt that it was really important to spend a lot of ink to drive home and to clarify, like when it came to which one should I spend the most time making sure these people get this, the one that he spent the most on was the one about remembering and practicing the Sabbath. I mean, maybe God knew that busyness would destroy more of our lives than murder would. Maybe God knew that busyness would be a greater temptation for most of us than stealing is. Maybe God knew that if we made this a priority and every single week we took a whole day and we dedicated it to rest, to spending time with God, to listening to him, to getting re-energized, to centering ourselves. Maybe he knew that if we did that every single week, there'd be a much greater chance we would follow all the other commandments. So, here's a challenge today for all of us. I want to challenge us to begin to take up Sabbath and give up busyness. Begin to give up busyness by practicing Sabbath every single week in your life. Now, if you're already doing this, but you're not doing it well, consider this sort of a kick and to do it more. If you're not doing this at all, this might feel hard. It might feel difficult. This is a good chance for you to start from scratch. And if you can't even fathom taking a whole day off at this point, start with 6 hours. Start with 8 hours. If Saturday or Sunday is the best time for you, say, I'm going to carve out these 6 or 8 hours, and I'm just going to rest. And I'm going to do that for a few weeks or a couple months, and then I'll make it 12 hours, and then I'll try to make it 24 hours at some point. If your job means that you have to work on some Sundays, that's okay. There's nothing about Sunday that defines Sunday has to be the day that's Sabbath for you. In fact, for the ancient Israelites, it was Saturday. For me, I've made it from Friday dinner to Saturday dinner. That's my 24 hours of Sabbath, where I try not to do anything related to work. Now, another little small pushback. Well, what if I have to like help somebody else out during my Sabbath time where I'm supposed to be resting? What if somebody's hurt or sick and I have to take care of them? Well, God's not like legalistic about this. Jesus wasn't legalistic about it. In fact, Jesus helped other people on the Sabbath, and he said that was a way to consecrate it, to make it holy. So if you have to help somebody out, if there's somebody that's sick and you have to take care of them on your Sabbath, that's okay. That's a way also of dedicating that day to God. So, give it a try. Real simply, here's what you need to do. Define what work is for you. And maybe that's just sitting down this afternoon and making a list. Like, here's, or talking with a friend. Here's the things that are work for me. And then what does it look like to give those up for 24 hours? I want to close with two things. Number one, first, it's a book recommendation. It's a book called 24-6. 24-6 by Matthew Sleeth. And it's an amazing book on this whole concept of busyness and Sabbath. And what if it looked like, what if our lives were lived 24-6? What if we were going 24-6, but there was one day a week that we rested and we stopped? If this message, if this last few minutes has challenged you, if it's convicted you, if you've said in your heart, yeah, I need to start doing this, I don't know how, but I need to start doing this better or more in my life, then you need to go home and get on Amazon and order this book today and buy it. If you can't afford it, come talk to me. We'll buy it for you. We'll put it in your hands, whatever we need to do. But this will be a great book to unpack some of these ideas and give you some really practical suggestions about how you can start doing this in your life. The second thing is I want to read you the conclusion to Shauna Nyquist's blog post that I read earlier today. After realizing how busy and frantic her life had become, this is what she writes. I'm adopting a ruthless anti-frantic policy. I'm done with frantic. The new baseline for me, well, saying yes to this require me to live in a frantic way. I'm saying no more often than I'm saying yes. I'm asking hard questions about why I've kept myself so busy all these years. The space and the silence I'm creating is sometimes beautiful and sometimes terrifying. Then she says, sometimes I feel like I'm in a cartoon airplane when the engine gets cut and the plane hovers for a few long seconds before starting to fall. But then sometimes I feel so strongly, like for the first time in a long time, I'm listening to the right voices. I'm remaking my way of living from the inside out. And then she says, my job is all about striking while the iron's hot. Some of you might relate to this with your job. But sometimes you have to trust that the iron will still be hot later and that there's more to life than that iron. Sometimes you have to trust that life is long for most of us and that there will be other irons. And she writes this. This is great. My inbox is a disaster. The house is messier these days, and that's how it's going to be for a while. I'm not powering my life with the white-knuckled, keyed-up buzz of efficiency and multitasking anymore. The word that rings in my mind is anti-frantic. Sleep, slow, present with my kids, present to my own life, anti-frantic. What if we were a community that was also anti-frantic? What if we were a community that said, let's not create a culture of busyness in our lives. Let's give that up and find something that's more life-giving. What if we could encourage each other to do that, to rest, to take a day off, to practice Sabbath every single week in our lives? I promise if you try this, it'll begin to make a huge, huge difference. Let me pray. God, we all do want to be whole. And God, we want to live a life that's meaningful, and that's tied up in things we do. It's tied up in work that's often meaningful and time we spend with friends, it's meaningful, and things we do with our families, it's meaningful. And yet, God, we know that you've called us to do all of those things out of a position of rest. Not to do them to the max where we get burned out and we're forced to rest. And so, God, help us to embrace what's important, not what's urgent. If some of us in this room need to make some significant changes to our schedule, give us the courage to do that. If we need to start developing a culture of unbusyness, help us to know how to do that. And more than anything else, help us to begin carving out one day every single week where we can just stop and we can just trust that you'll provide and that you'll meet us in that space. Help us to do that not just as individuals, God, but help us to also do that as an entire community. And help us to know how to encourage each other to do that as well. We pray this in your name. Amen.